Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 340. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is good. Just dealing with the struggles of parenting a baby and a three-year-old right now. That's been the struggle recently and having no live baseball. But other than that, it is good.
What's more of a struggle for you right now? The kids or the no live baseball? Like, what's irking you more?
The kids. Screaming yeah. Baby and a three-year-old and a terrible, whatever you want to define it as.
Yeah, it's a fun phase. Luckily, I don't miss that, but then I have a preteen right now, and it's, I think, just as bad, but in much different ways. They just, they know more vocabulary now, and the looks that you get are dirtier. They're great kids, obviously, but yeah, it's no more minor league baseball. Double A, I'm gonna start off this with a little irk of mine. The new minor league first half, second half format sucks. I hate it. People out there might like it. I think it's completely useless. I don't know what it's trying to do with Portland. Missed the playoffs because they were, I think, second. Was it either second in both halves or second in one and third in the other? Missed the postseason, but were the best team in the division overall, but missed the postseason. So I was hoping to get one, at least one more series, couple more games this week, but no dice. It's Hartford and Somerset, I want to say, are the two in our division. They won each half. So I don't like the first half, second half thing. I don't know why they even started it, but no more minor league baseball for me. Season's over, as I know it is for you as well. But now we wait for another, I don't know, 5.5, 6 weeks. We'll be out there in the AFL, but still got plenty major leagues, you know, to talk about. We did our prospect risers and fallers last week on the midweek episode with Martin Sokolsky of Pitcher List and Fantrax. So if you missed that, go check that out. A lot of great names discussed there. And we will do the Dynasty MLB version today. We got six fallers and six risers, primarily hitters, all minor hitters. That is how it worked out. Chris has two pitchers mixed in, so 10 hitters, two pitchers overall. A lot of fun names for sure. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. You can find us on Twitter, out of order here, but whatever. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydigo.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us. And we're going to keep pumping out a lot of content throughout the offseason. There is no offseason for Dynasty. We all know that. And, of course, you got to check out all the great things going on over at Rotoballer. baseball winding down, but plenty of football content, basketball, such a great team over at RotoBaller that we're happy to be a part of. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package for any sport over at rotoballer.com. All right, let's start with the followers. We usually like to get those out of the way first. Chris is starting out with a former Cy Young Award winner with his.
Yeah, let's talk about Corbin Burnes, who it's been a weird year for him because you look on the surface and it's all right, pretty good year. 3.06 ERA across 30 starts and 182 innings, but the strikeouts have disappeared. Burnes started the year for me tier two dynasty SP, which maybe it was in tier one because at the beginning of the year, probably I don't think Skeens or Skuball had really separated themselves. Skeens obviously wasn't that high, but Burnes has had a strange year where he's stopped missing bats and the K rate's at 22%, which is a little odd and uncharacteristic of him, to say the least. And he's thrown in a couple stinkers in there too that don't help anybody down the stretch. And I know that, you know, the last few starts have been better, but in August, I mean, against the Red Sox, 8 earned in 4 innings. That obviously was really rough. Follow that up with against the Astros with 5 earned across 5 2/3. Previously, 3 earned, 4 earned. So starts really hurt teams. And I know he's bounced back a bit, but looking at Burnes, it's interesting. Who is Corbin Burnes? As we've seen the strikeout rate tick down pretty much every season for the last 4 years. 2020, obviously a shortened year, but 36.7%. 2021 is where we'll start there. 35.6%, 30.5% in 2022. That's still a really good mark. 25.5% in 2023 and 2.1% this season. It's also come with, you know, the walk rate maintaining and being respectable. 5.9% walk rate, really good mark there. But it's interesting to dig in, like, why is Corbin Burnes not missing as many bats this year? And I think that that's a separator because, sure, like, it's a nice ERA. I'll gladly take a 3.06 ERA out of a pitcher on my fantasy team. Like, I would never scoff at that. But at the same time, look at the strikeouts, and we can look at Tobias Myers, who has a 3.02 ERA. He has more strikeouts, like I say, higher strikeout percentage than Burnes over the last, sorry, I've got that actually filtered since August. Myers has been really good all year, and you go back and excuse that filter I had on, I don't know why I was looking at that earlier, but Myers, in a similar sense, has been really good. He doesn't strike out a ton of batters, but are we going to value him like Corbin Burnes level? Probably not. But what about a Seth Lugo, who has thrown 197 innings this year, has a 3.05 ERA, and the strikeout rate's pretty similar to Corbin Burnes? Obviously, two totally different pitchers. Values are vastly different when you say the name. But I just think about, like, where do we value these arms? And so, among qualified pitchers, yeah, Burnes looks really good when it comes to ERA. Like, that's been really awesome to see. And he's really stood out among the pack there. But again, like, I look at it, I've filtered out for the entire year, and Tobias Myers has a higher strikeout rate than Corbin Burnes. Seth Lugo, very similar, and very similar ERA, which is interesting. Michael King is sub-3 ERA with Ubu's more strikeout or higher strikeout percentage at least. So I'm like, all right, where does Corbin Burnes belong, like, among dynasty SP? And I just thought this last debate, I had him way too high. So that had to change, and he had to take a little bit of a dip for me. But now the question is, like, where does Corbin Burnes belong? Where for dynasty would or should he be, I guess, is the question. He's fixing to turn 30, which isn't a death sentence. Pitchers go much deeper into their career, but yeah, I'm looking like at different names, and yeah, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. He's fine, but with the strikeout rate trending down and missing less bats, Burnes has certainly taken a hit for me.
So I just pulled up the K-minus walk rate leaderboard over the entire season, and this is just for pitchers with 100 innings, which puts us at 122 pitchers. He is at Corbin Burns is at 47 at 16.2%. Some names right around him. These are fine arms, but not arms you'd expect Corbin Burns to be in the middle of. Let's go. The three ahead of him are Spencer Arrighetti, Nick Martinez, and Cutter Crawford. The three behind him, Ryan Pepio, Mitch Keller, and oh, look, it's Tobias Meyer. Yeah, you look at it like it's like Tobias Meyer. Okay, same team. 307 ERA, 15.9% K minus walk. Burns, 306 ERA, 16.2% K minus walk. He's basically been the same pitcher as Tobias Meyer for this season, obviously. You, like you said, we're not valuing those two the same, but Burns, yeah, he's still been good. Obviously, 306 ERA, and still has around a league average K rate. But yeah, I traded him earlier in this year in my home keeper league. I got back Freddy Peralta and Pablo Lopez, who have had their ups and downs for sure. But I'm feeling okay with that deal, and I'm going forward with Cole Reagans as my ace in that league. But he's still good. But yeah, it just feels like we were saying about Zach Gallen before we started recording. It's a mess season, not a bad season, but just a mess season for Burns. My first one, I'm going to New York with Anthony Volpe, who's been mostly down this season, and especially lately. Look at since August 7th, his last 36 games, 140 plate appearances, zero home runs, only five doubles, so five extra base hits total, 194, 243, 233 slash line, so sub 500 OPS. And does have six steals, which is decent. Eight walks to 38 strikeouts. Obviously, he's a Yankee shortstop, which is one of the most desirable positions in all of sports. Yankees, obviously, Derek Jeter, big reason for that. But Volpe, yeah, he went 20-20 as a rookie last year, which is, you know, decent. I'm not going to say that's not, but we're talking about a guy that has a 665 OPS in his first 2 years. We're talking over 300 games. And the K rate has gotten better this year. Walk rate has gotten worse this year, though, so trade-off there. Quality of contact has gone down a ton. Barrel rate from 9% to 3.7. Hard hit rate from 43% to 35%. He's still slightly below average hard hit and EV, but it's not barreling up pitches. Launch angle has been almost cut in half. He's hitting more ground balls by about 10%. Fewer fly balls, fewer line drives. Contact rates are around league average, but he's just not hitting the ball hard or at ideal angles this year. Talking about a 289 career OBP, below 300 both years, slug below 400 both years. He'll run into 10-plus home runs a year, and he's pretty near lock for at least 20 steals a year, getting that 25 to 30 range. But at what cost? If you're not going to get a ton of power, it's 21, like that low 20s range, the high end of what we can expect from him, probably, even in Yankee Stadium, he's probably more like in the teens. I think he can get up from 11 moving forward, but he's probably more like 15-ish. So, yeah, you can get 15 and 20-plus out of him, which is decent, but at the same time, if you're getting an average that's below 250, potentially even down 220 range, you're getting a below 300 OBP, it's kind of a trade-off. It's not... The profile isn't doing as much good as it could. So, I don't know. There's not a lot of metrics that have me really looking to invest. You go to look at his sliders, which is not, you know, the be-all, end-all, but there's a lot of blue there, a lot of sub-25th percentile, especially in the quality of contact. And X-slug is 8th percentile. Chase rate is fine. It doesn't strike out a lot, doesn't chase a whole lot. It still has – he's going to be a fine player, but he gets valued way too high. I don't have him top 100 anymore. I still think you can put him top 100. Could he get back to a back-end top 100 player? Sure. I'll give him that. He definitely has an upside if he can get the quality of contact turned around here and stop hitting so many ground balls. But, yeah, for right now, I just cannot rank this guy top 100. He's not, like, terribly far out, 125 to 140 range for me right now. But, yeah, top 100 is just not cutting it with him anymore.
Yeah, I really thought that a breakout could happen, just given the improvements he made with contact early in the year, and they've stuck, but the quality of contact just hasn't been there at all.
Yeah, it's like a trade-off. Like, he's like, all right, making more contact, but not hitting for as much power. The happy medium, he needs to find it. Maybe he can. I don't know. I'm not saying he can. Obviously, yeah. He's still, what is he, 20? I'm going to guess, what, 23? Yep, 23. He'll be 24 early next season. So, obviously, he's still very young.
Yeah. All right. My next down is someone you've been out on quite a while, and that's Isak Paredes, who post-trade, that trade has not worked out well for either team, I don't think, other than the fact that the Rays got Ty Johnson. I'm pretty sure that was the deal that they got him from. And he's been he was stellar to finish the year. But aside the point, Christopher Morel and Isak Paredes have been not good. And you look at the production since the trade, and it's been, you know, really tough to see. And you look at the numbers. So post-trade, it's a 221, 331, 315 slash line, over 178 plate appearances. You're talking about a 315 slug, a 91 WRC plus. It's not good. And we've talked about it several times. I don't need to go into detail about it again, but the left field in the Trop versus Wrigley is a 40-foot difference, like 310 to 350. It's really notable. And when you don't hit the ball very hard, you have to hit the angles right. Paredes does that, but it's not working to pull the ball to the corner there, especially given the change in dimensions. The exit velocity data is not great. It's a 3% barrel rate since the trade, a 31% hard hit rate. The plate discipline remains pretty good. He's making a ton of contact, but there's been no results from it at all. And I'm afraid that moving forward, this could be an issue beyond just these 2 months since he was traded. I know he's 25 years old, but I'm not sure there's any room to really add power to make this work. You look at the frame, there's no projection, and he's going to have to work on adding bat speed to make this work. I think Paredes is falling off pretty hard. And who is he long-term, and what does he project like? Because now he's going to have to overcompensate. He's going to try to have to rework things to make this work. And I'm not sure it's going to work out for him, unfortunately. So I'm out on Paredes, and he's taking a big hit.
Yeah, his profile does not fit Wrigley Field at all. I think it's actually even more. It might even be like a 50-foot difference between left fields at the two ballparks, comparing Tropicana to Wrigley. You saw that. That was the first thing I went and looked at. I'm like, all right, what's left field in Wrigley? Oh, it's 355 or 360, whatever it is. I forget. At the Trop, it's, what, 310? Yeah, that's for a guy that pulls everything. That's massive. And people know I've never been a Paredes guy. That's a very flawed profile. I mean, you get traded, boom, your value craters. Pitchers start pitching you around that, kind of work away from the barrel, that you can't pull it as much. It's a very risky profile. And yeah, he got traded to a place where his value has cratered. So yeah, that deal has not been, at least the two biggest names, the headliners in that deal, have both been pretty terrible. I think they probably both have average under 170 or something like that since the trade. It's been bad. All right. My next guy is a guy that I've actually liked for a long time, but I was thinking back, and there's a similar player to this guy, tons of talent, but you know, some strikeout issues, average that was all over the freaking place, durability issues, more so for that guy than this guy. But you know, that other guy was Byron Buxton, and this guy who I'm talking about now, Luis Robert. I can't keep justifying ranking Robert as a top 25 guy when you look at, yeah, he's had the one really big year, and that was last year. He went 38-20, even though he went MIA for fantasy managers in September and wasn't on the IL, which was frustrating. But this year, if he plays 7 more games this year, he'll get to 100. That'll be the second time he's gotten there. I'm taking up 2020 year, which actually he played 56 out of 60 games that year, which was his rookie year. Solid rookie year. But since then, he only has, in 4 years, so 38 home runs within every other year, 13, 12, 14. Steals, he's up to over 20 again. So he's still running, so that's been consistent. With the average, 233 to 338 to 284, 264, 225. The K rate, after being, he came in with a little bit of a swing and miss issue, which is not out of the ordinary. You know, foreign player coming in, big time stuff. Sometimes there is that swing and miss issue there. Had a 32.2% K rate that first year. Then he dropped it down to 20.6% and then 19.2%. And two, I'm like, all right, he's still not walking a lot, but you'll take the K rate better than the average K rate. That has jumped up to 28.9% last year, 33.1% this year. The quality of contact is still above average. He's got 10.6% barrel, 90-mile-per-hour average exit velocity and a 40.4% hard hit rate. So obviously we know he still hit the ball hard, and now the power speed blend is still there. There's really no questioning that, but the approach is still bad. Zone contact has dipped for three straight seasons. It's now at 77%. Overall contact is only 64.5%. Chase rate's always been high. It's actually the best of his career, and it's still at 36%, which is high. And then you factor in the durability. It's just, I think a lot of things have to break for Robert to be a top, like even top 50, top even a top 100 player in any particular season. Obviously, we know he has the upside to be a top 25 or heck, even a top 10 player. We have seen that, but we've seen that once. There's so many red flags in this profile too. And yeah, maybe this year he's maybe a little mentally checked out. I wouldn't blame him for that one bit. But and at the same time, I think he's a buy low because I think the perceived value has dropped so much. But he's also a faller right now. I can't rank him top 25 anymore. Top 50, I think, is the question now. I'll probably still have him top 50, but closer to 50 than 25. I still like Robert, and he absolutely could have another one of those massive seasons where he flirts with 40-20 or something like that. But I think those seasons are going to be few and far between the other seasons where either he's the average is low or he's just not playing a ton of games. Get OBP under 320 in four of his 5 years. I still like him, but cannot rank him that high anymore. So got to have him as a follower right now, unfortunately. Chris, going over to another young, exciting player. Who you got there, Chris?
Yeah, CJ Abrams has been really bad for most of the year. He had a great first month of the season. He hit 7 home runs, first 26 games in March and April. It came with a really solid 295, 373, 619 slash, near 1,000 OPS in that month, which he was soaring. I saw him like in top 10s of Dynasty rankings, and it hasn't stuck. Yeah, he had a good June. June was spectacular. He had 10 doubles, 4 homers, and he had OPS over 1,000 in June. But the rest of the months are really bad. It was a 519 OPS in May. Since the start of July, slash of 183, 264, 313. He does have 7 home runs and 7 doubles, but again, we're looking at, you know, a near 3 month sample at this point. Yeah, the speed's good. He's got 15 stolen bases. I get it. He's run a low BABIP, but there's some concerning aspects of his game that have been really exploited. He's chasing a ton. The contact rates have been really inconsistent. There's been more whiff, and it's just not been a great year for Abrams, really outside of a small chunk of time. And I think it's a little bit concerning. The hard hit numbers, not ideal. You wonder, like, how much power does Abrams get to? Is he just this inconsistent player that we saw? It's like a Jazz Chisholm mold where we've seen that we saw a lot of inconsistencies in his play. And there's flashes of being really good, but also, yeah, we're looking at another year of a near 300 OBP. He's just slightly above that right now. The slug is slightly better than it was last year, but that's been propped by a really good stretch that he had. And I don't know. I just look at this profile. I see the volatility. Yep, he's going to end the season 20 home runs, 30 stolen bases. That's extremely valuable. But you've had a lot of down with Abrams head-to-head league. Like, the volatility hurts you. I don't know. I don't know what to do with this profile. He's not like a fall out of the top 100 type guy, but I think that we need to see more consistency from CJ Abrams. Haven't seen that. He's horrific in the field. One of the worst gloves in baseball, actually. His fielding run value, negative 13. His outs above average, negative 17. Those are both worst marks in the game. You obviously have to factor that in. The Nats just aren't going to bench him or anything. Like, it's not going to happen. He's part of this exciting young core. But I don't know. I think that there's some concerning aspects to Abrams' game. And I think he's been exploited a bit this year. I'm curious to see how he rebounds for 2025. But yeah, I think that he deservingly takes a hit.
Yeah. No, he's so interesting. We see the upside. He's had those stretches. But then I feel like the valleys with him are more profound than the peaks, and that's just hard to roster. Obviously, end of the year, he's still going to give you some solid counting stats, but especially like you so mentioned in the head-to-headers in general, it's maddening to roster where it's like, all right, he just carried me for the last 3 weeks, and now he's hitting .130 over the last month. It's just really hard. You know, I've always been a little lower than most in Abrams, but yeah, he has definitely been pretty rough to roster here over the last few months or so. And same thing we said for my next follower here with, and I hate to put this guy as a follower. And let me just preface this by saying, I'm not out on this guy. It is extremely early in his career. He can get better. All those things, all right? I know people are going to say it. He's only 20, but I'm wondering, what is Jackson Holliday going to look like? I mean, he's had two stints in the major leagues. Obviously, we know how the first one went. Came back and looked really good at the beginning of the second one. He came back on the 31st of July, hit a home run that day. Then he had three games without a home run, but then three games with a home run, and then four overall in six games. But he's now gone 32 games without a home run. And then if you look at over his last 26 games, 128, 188, 180 slash line, only three extra base hits, five walks, and 30 strikeouts, which that's the area I want to focus on. Because entering this year, Baseball America, which is the king of kings, in you know, kind of the baseball prospect evaluation world, gave two hitters a 70 grade hit tool, and Jackson Holliday was one of them. And I think every single person in the world would agree with that back then when this came out in February or whatever it was. Because Holliday was looking at one of the best pure hitters we've seen over the last decade or more come through the minor leagues. And obviously, the bloodlines, his little brother could be number one pick next year, or at least in that discussion. Obviously, he's got Matt Holliday as his father. So everything was lining up for him. And it was like, all right, where'd you get to the power, at least the quality of contact? It's actually been pretty solid. It's 9.2 barrel, 88.3 mile an hour average XFBL, which is basically league average, and a 43% hard hit rate. So overall, it's a bit above average quality of contact. But the extreme green flags in his profile that largely made him the number one prospect, or at least top three or four, was the approach, was the contact, and that hasn't been there. And again, early, 187 plate appearances. He's 20. I get it. But I'm wondering, like, this is what you're supposed to excel at. And it's not like you've been like okay or mediocre. You've been terrible at it right now and so far in the majors. 5.4% walk rate, 34.6% K rate. And that was first stint in the majors and now. Like, that's been a constant thing. And then another issue is the ground ball rate's 57%. Right now, so while he's hitting the ball solidly, it's into the ground more often than not. And like, fly ball rate is actually above league average as well, but the line drive rate is under half the major league average of 24.7%. He's at 11.9%. So just not hitting the ball at ideal angles. Sprint speed's there, 94th percentile. So showing an even better power speed blend than I think I anticipated personally, but showing a much worse contact skills and much worse approach than I think anybody expected. Zone contact 74.5%, overall contact 65%. So again, I think obviously he's going to improve. I don't think he's going to be terrible. I don't think he's going to be a bust, not even close to thinking that. But is he going to be the batting title perennial contender that a lot of us, myself included, thought he could be? Is he going to be the guy that can get up, have an impactful OBP and throw it with 400? I don't know. He's got to make a lot of adjustments have to be made here. Luckily, again, great family, great organization to be in. So I do think he's going to pick it up here, but is he going to be a top 25 fantasy guy? That's, you know, number one, number two, number three, second baseman in that positional rankings, or is he going to be more of a 50 to 100 guy? That's what I'm questioning. That's why he's a follow from me right now. Hopefully he can turn it around. He's a phenomenal talent. I hope he can. Even though it'll hurt my Red Sox because they're in the same division. But right now, I think Jackson Holliday has to be a follower.
Yeah, sadly, we still need to see him take some steps forward. And haven't really seen that. Thought that he was coming back this second stint and looking the part. But yeah, there's some holes in the swing that need to be addressed for sure. And
breaking balls, especially. Sorry, one last thing I just saw. He's hitting .085 against breaking balls with an 83 mile an hour EV. He's only hitting .198 against fastballs. his highest average is actually against off speed, oddly enough. So yeah, definitely be some warts he's gonna iron out here for sure.
Yeah, it'll be interesting off season to see what kind of adjustments he makes
for sure. All right, Chris, who's your next? Oh, was that the last one? Oh, that was the last follower. All right. Negatives are out of the way. Let's get over to the positives here. Chris going back to the shortstop and one of the lone bright spots for the Los Angeles Angels this season.
Yeah, Zach Neto, 21 homers, 30 stolen bases on the year, and 572 plate appearances. Really impressive season from him. He's made, I think, tangible strides this year in several departments, and the results have paid dividends. Now you look at the StatCast data, a lot of similar stuff to last year. So it's okay, how is he getting to these results? Doesn't really make sense. He's pulling the ball a little more, so that obviously helps. Going oppo less, you're going to get to more power, home run power that way, per se. He's hit the ball harder on the higher end. So some of the higher end exit velocities have been a lot better. And the ex-Wobicon, so when he's making contact, is at 380 up from 357 last year. So that's a pretty notable jump in quality of contact. The contact rates overall have improved, about a 2% gain in overall and end zone contact, which is nice. He's chasing more, but who cares? Like, he's being more aggressive and it's paying off. I think that's really what we're seeing, is that he's been a tad more aggressive and he's getting some dividends from it. So I think that Neto, young guy, 23 years old, he was rushed to the majors. He really had no time in the minors. And I think that almost hurt him in a way, where he really needed that time to develop. And he has 217 total plate appearances in the minors, which is wild to look at and see. But that's how aggressively he was pushed. And you know, we know that the Angels do that. But now it looks like a developmental success. I think that, you know, Neto's here to stay. I think that, do we expect him to go 20-30 again next year? Probably not. But I think that there could certainly be a consistent, like, 15 home run bat that consistently steals you 20 plus bases. And there's a lot of value to be had there. Neto's inside my top 100 and climbing. I'm wondering if he can take another step forward next year when it comes to like hard hit numbers, exit velocity, etc. I think there may be a little more juice here. And if that's the case, then I'll definitely buy into him being a consistent 20 home run bat. But yeah, very excited and thrilled with what Zach Neto has done this year. So he is a big riser.
Yeah, no, for me as well. He's been inside my top 100 as well. I have him in the 65 range, and the gap between him and Abrams is closing quickly. Who would you rather have moving forward, CJ Abrams or Zach Neto?
Probably Abrams, just because I do believe in the upside a little bit more. Like, if Abrams hits, like, it's going to be a much higher ceiling than, you know, what Neto offers. Neto might be at peak value right now.
Possible, yeah, because can he get to be a top 50 guy? Maybe, but yeah, I think he can settle in as like top 75 or so. I think there's some legitimacy to what he's done. So yeah, he definitely has to be a riser right now. My first name is probably the least exciting name I'll talk about all show, but Spencer Horwitz has just been low-key solid for that Toronto Blue Jays team. Obviously, Vlad's had a really good season and had that one stretch where he was absolutely bonkers. But then most of the other, Springer's getting older, Bo's having a bad season. You know, it's been a lot of down for that team. So he's been a bright spot for them and definitely needed for them. He's been hitting cleanup behind Vladdy a lot over the last couple of months. And you look at the profile, it's not going to blow you away, but it's just pretty decent across the board. So far this year, he's got 339 plate appearances, 12 home runs, 274, 363, 462 slash line. So decent all across the board there. Quality of contact is slightly above league average. 9% barrel, EV 88.6 miles an hour, and hard hit rate at 38%. So another decent set of numbers there. Again, same thing with the contact. Contact's 85.2% in zone, 80.9% overall. Both of those are above average by a few percentage points. You know, walk and strikeout rates are good. 11% walk, 17.2% barrel. Yeah, he's not going to give you any speed whatsoever. He's bottom 8% in sprint speed, zero steals in his career. He's never going to give you any speed, even in today's age where almost anybody can steal bases. But can Horwitz be like a 10-20 homer bat that hits you 270 with a good OBP and maybe around 80 runs in RBIs or something like that? Yeah, could he just be a good four-category guy, not one that'll stand out in any one of the four, but good in four and no real areas where he's going to hurt you outside of the lack of speed, which you absolutely can build around both in redraft and dynasty. Yeah, so like, not every riser is a sexy profile. Not every riser is a league winner, but if you're going to win, you got to have some of these guys like Spencer Horwitz, and especially that's coming with second base eligibility moving forward. If you don't want to invest and pay up for some of these bigger names where a lot of these bigger names have some question marks, whether it's durability, performance, and we've already talked about a couple. The top of the second base rankings is there's a lot more questions than answers there. And so if you don't want to pay up to get one of those top names, you want to just pay a much lower price tag and just get you a decent, dependable guy, I think that's Spencer Horwitz. And again, not sexy, but definitely useful. And he's still only 26 years old. So still got so getting into those, you know, peak physical years, so to speak. So, yeah, so I wish I had more. I think I have one share of Spencer Horwitz. I wish I had more. He's just a decent player. All right, Chris, who's your next guy?
I'm going with Brian Wu, who just continues to impress. He has been spectacular. And the crazy thing is, there was that injury midseason, and I was really worried that he might be like toast. It's not often we see pitchers like come back from that and be okay. Just looking up the exact injury, I don't remember exactly, but it was like, if I remember right, it was a precursor to TJ, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was something, it was like one of the tendons or something, the flexor tendon, or I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, yeah, it was in the spring, actually. He had the hamstring injury midseason, but he had the elbow injury this spring, and I thought like the season might be completely lost for him, but he's just, man, he's been impressive. And I don't know, I'm pretty blown away by what he's done this year. 2.85 ERA in 110 innings. Yeah, the strikeouts haven't, you know, been super there. 89 and 110. With how Wu has commanded his pitches, how many strikes he's thrown, it's a 0.88 whip, which is really impressive. A 2.6% walk rate. Nobody saw that coming. We're looking at somebody that walked 8.5% of batters last year. His locations look really good on the heat maps. He's kept the four seam up, throwing the sinker down, change up down, slider down. Like, it's been really fun to see Brian Wu take off. And I'm wondering now, what's the next step? Can he get back to some more whiffs? He misses more bats, then, man, it could be really exciting to put this all together with what he could be. Because right now we've seen a drop in his whiff rate on his four seam. The slider has actually taken a really big hit on whiff rate this year, which is interesting. It was 33% last year, 19.7% this year. So that's been weird to see that substantial drop. The sweeper whiff rate has gone up pretty notably. This changeup, you know, changeup hasn't missed a ton of bats, but it does induce a lot of weak contact. Keeps the ball on the ground. The run value on his four seam and sinker are extremely good. And the sweeper as well. I don't know. I'm wondering, like, what does the next step look like for Brian Wu? And is he able to miss more bats? But given the injuries this year, I think he's just been really impressive. I say that as he came off a really bad start last night, actually, against the Yankees, 7 earned in 4 2/3. But that just puts in perspective how good he's been pretty much all year. I don't know. I'm really excited about Wu, and he's 24 years old. There's certainly a big jump there for him in my rankings.
And the funny thing is, he's their five, like maybe their four at best. Like, that rotation is so good with him, Bryce Miller, Luis Castillo, Kirby, and Logan Gilbert. All five of them, like, the worst ERA out of those five is actually Luis Castillo at 3.64. Then you got Kirby at 3.62. Like, Wu has been better than Kirby this year. If you look at overall, yeah, Kirby's got a K rate about 2.5% higher, 23.1 to 20.8. But Wu also has an ERA 2.85 to Kirby's 3.62. Yeah, FIP, XFIP, Sierra all slightly lean to the Kirby, and I still have Kirby ahead. But should there be like a massive gap between Kirby and Wu? I'm not saying Kirby's overrated, but I think Wu is still underrated. And yeah, it's because he hasn't been the big K rate arm, as you mentioned. And he's got a little bit of luck on his side, 2.34 batting average against. But yeah, I think Wu is definitely underrated and needs to be ranked much higher than he is. And I was guilty of that as well. And same thing with Logan Gilbert, who I almost put on here. Gilbert, the reason why I didn't have Gilbert like a top five dynasty arm, I was like, all right, the K rate is above average, but it was like in Kirby range, 23-24%. But Gilbert's been over 30% in the last like two or three months. So Gilbert's a guy that's a good riser right now as well. But my first riser here, or no, my second riser, excuse me, going to Pete Crow Armstrong. And you know, even though he is a riser, this is still a interesting profile. It's definitely flawed. He has his strengths. He has his weaknesses, but at the same time, he is a riser right now. He's been performing pretty well over the last month and a half. He has 7 home runs, 7 steals, hitting well over 300. But do I think he's the average is going to stay high? No. Pete Crow Armstrong is probably like a 250 hitter. In one that will be very streaky at that. He'll have these months, like right now he's hitting, I think, 326 or whatever over the last month. Then he'll have some months where he's flirting on the Mendoza line, because the contact rates are pretty poor. Right now, 73.3% zone contact, 71% overall. So the overall isn't terrible, but that zone is pretty bad. Chase rate's over 41%, which is very high. So definitely some issues there. Doesn't walk a lot. Definitely less than we saw from him in the minor leagues. Only a 5.1% walk rate. K rate's not terrible, though, at right around 24%. Phenomenal athlete. I'm not making a direct comparison, but you get some Brenton Doyle vibes here, because both these guys are elite center fielders and just really fun to watch. And that defense is how much value they add to the Cubs and Rockies, respectively, will keep them in the lineup while they're struggling as young players. Sprint speed, 99th percentile. And even as a 300 OBP guy, PCA could be an annual at 30+. He's already at 27 this year. In 373 plate appearances. So that's like a 650 plate appearance pace of probably somewhere in the 45, 46 range. So I think you can basically, as long as he's starting regularly, I'll pencil him in for 30+ easily. And I think the power is, it's been up and down through his professional career, but there's enough power here, I think, to get 15 to 18 home runs, something like that. He's got 10 right now. Quality of contact, that's right around league average, a tick above. In barrel average EV and hard ground, he's cut the ground balls this year as well. So if you can stomach out the 240, 250-ish average, Brenton Doyle's getting back to that range, unfortunately, lately. So again, some similarities here, but if you'll take that, you're going to get, say, like a 15-35 season or something like that, which he almost could do this year. If he starts picking up the pace a little bit, obviously running out of time, but yeah, this looks like a 15-35 type of profile. And that's still pretty valuable, even with a lower average. While there is some warts here and some definite red flags, PCA definitely is a riser right now as well with how he's hit over the last several weeks or so. Chris, who is your last riser?
So I'm going with Mark Vientos. He's someone that I was definitely late to come around on. I just really did not believe that the contact skills would allow for him to perform like he has. And the interesting thing is he's just been so good all year, despite some major whiff issues and major strikeout issues. And yeah, I know the month of September's not been the best for him. He certainly had a down month, but still getting to power. And that's been a big thing. He's up to now 24 home runs on the year. It's a 269, 324, 516 slash. Vientos has made some major strides, and it's just been really impressive to watch, in my opinion. And we always knew he had the power. There was no denying that. But it was always, would he make enough contact to make the profile work? And yeah, I do think there's still some concerns, but he has been consistent enough where I'm like, okay, maybe it can work. The zone contact rate's up near 4 percentage points this year. The overall contact rate, It's up by about 3 percentage points. And even though it's still not great, it's more manageable, which I think is big. It's also cut the chase rate over 4 percentage points. I just look at the overall profile and sure, maybe he doesn't always hit for average. He may not hit 270 next year. Maybe it's closer to 250, but I do think the power can play. I know the power can play. And maybe he's just a consistent 25-30 home run bat with inconsistent batting averages. Like I think about a Teoscar Hernandez who puts up some good power numbers. And you know, the batting averages have been inconsistent throughout his career just due to contact. But yeah, I mean, he settles in around the 260 range. Maybe that's who Vientos will be. And that has a lot of value. Obviously, at the hot corner, you need the power to be there. 24 home runs and 413 plate appearances is really good. Home run per plate appearance total for sure. 24 years old, former top prospect, one of the highest barrel rates in baseball. Seems like everything's just coming together for him, and it's been really fun to watch.
Yeah, Vientos has been a savior for me this year at that third base position. As I mentioned several times this year, I went hard into Jake Berger, who, yes, has been phenomenal second half, as he always is, but he was terrible in the first half. Nolan Marte, Ke'Bryan Hayes, I had a lot of those three guys. And for more often than not, that did not work out. Even in my home keeper league, I went into the year with Ke'Bryan Hayes. Luckily, I was able to get Mark Vientos when he started heating up. I've been running that wave ever since. So that's been great. So yeah, Vientos, definitely that power is very good. I'm going to end with Wyatt Langford. Obviously, all the focus right now is there's a lot of good rookie seasons. You get the Jacksons, you got Paul Skeens. But Langford, if he can get 3 more home runs over the last week and a half or whatever of the season, he could have a 70-run, 15-home-run, 70 RBI, 15-steal rookie year. That's still pretty solid. And as I mentioned, I did this tweet about probably a month ago at this point. The metrics with him and Jackson Chourio are very close. And even if you look at him overall, favor Langford a little bit. I think he led in more categories. And he's using like your basic quality of contact, chase, walk, K, sprint speed, all the basic ones. Wasn't going off the wall with those. And yeah, I think I wasn't saying Jackson Chourio is overrated or not good. Obviously, he's phenomenal and should be a top 20 dynasty asset. But you know, I still think Langford's going to be that guy. And yeah, it's taken him a little bit, and this has been a bit underwhelming overall. Sure, I will definitely admit to that. But you look at, he's still above league average in a lot of areas as a rookie who's had some ups and downs. Look at quality of contact, 9.3% barrel, 89.5 mile an hour average exit velocity, 43.9% hard hit rate, all above average. Walk rate, 9%, K rate, 20.5%, both above average by 0.5% and 1.5% respectively. He, for contact, he's 83.2% in zone, above average. 77.3% overall, above average. Chase rate, 23.3%, better than average. Like I said, he's very good across the board here. And yeah, it's taking a little bit of time, but he's starting to show to end the season here. And obviously, I'd love to see him do well, as I've been a big Langford guy, but this is making that ADP for next year go up a little bit, making that price tag and dynasty go back up a little bit. I was hoping to get cheaper price tag this offseason, ADP be a little bit lower. But in September here, 15 games, 345, 424, 672, slash line, 7 doubles, 4 home runs, 3 steals, 8 walks to 14 strikeouts. Again, he's basically above average in almost every area you look at in terms of contact, quality of contact, approach at the plate. I think you're going to be looking for a huge year from Langford next year. I think you could see him flirt with a 30-25 year or something like that. I still think he could be a first-round dynasty asset. Is he going to be like top 5? No, probably not. But could he be like a top 15, even borderline top 10 guy? Yeah, I still believe that guy's there. So he's rising back up rankings here. Metrics are good. Ending the season. And I think, you know, maybe there's still a little bit of a buying window this offseason. Not as much. Given how he's performed here in September, but I still think he's going to be just as good or better than Jackson Chourio. I think you could say the upside and ceiling for both of them is pretty close, but I think Langford's a little bit safer. I think he's a little bit of a higher floor. So long term, I would still give the slight edge to Wyatt Langford, and that's probably not popular right now. I think that if you put a poll out, It'd probably be 70-30 Churio if I had to guess, something like that. But I will still lean Langford. All right, that is going to wrap us up. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be back with you again on Monday. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.